Okay, good evening. So I apologize for being a teeny bit late. It happens as I'm walking over here. Somebody says, Rabbi Schwartz, can I ask you a few shilas? And he has a whole list of questions on Hilchos Mezuzah. So I tell the guy, oh my gosh, I'm on my way to give a shir on Hilchos Mezuzah. Ordinarily, I would tell you, like, get lost. But, like, maybe some of the questions that you are asking might actually be relevant for the shir that I'm giving tonight. Actually, nothing that he asked me about was stuff I planned on discussing. But nonetheless, I'll probably include this fellow's questions just because they're somewhat fresh in my mind. So tonight's topic is what we call Life in the Heights, number 11. What I'd like to do is a mezuzah overview with you. In other words, mezuzah is this interesting mitzvah. It's a very beautiful mitzvah. Obviously, mezuzah, the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Psachim, accomplishes some degree of shemira. A mezuzah protects us. We see this in the heebie-jeebie world. Often, when something is wrong, so people say you should check your mezuzahs. No, you ever heard that expression? So I don't know if that is exactly fully in line with our tradition, but nonetheless, we do believe that a mezuzah has a degree of protection that the mezuzah offers us, and it's important to be careful with the mezuzah. Most often, the issues that come up with mezuzahs is not that the mezuzah itself is not written properly, but that the mezuzah is placed in a weird place. Or I should say, better, in a ruined place. So what we'll talk about tonight are some common heights shilas related to mezuzah. So let's begin. You'll follow along, and I haven't really prepared that many jokes, so any jokes that emerge are just spontaneous. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that mitzvah says a lichtov parasha shema v'hayayim shemoa ulekava mezuzas ha-pesach. There's a mitzvah to write the parasha shema v'hayayim shemoa and to put them up, to attach them to the mezuzah. A mezuzah is technically not that little thing that has a parchment. A mezuzah is technically a doorpost. You're supposed to affix the parasha of Shema V'Hayayim Shemoa to your doorpost. And b'tzarchli zahir b'ma'od, you have to be very careful about mezuzah. B'koha zahir b'ya'arichu yamav v'imei v'anav. V'im eino zahir ba yiskatsru. In other words, if a person is careful about mezuzah, so the Torah tells us that leman yirbu yameichem v'imei v'neichem, if you're careful about mezuzah, so you're going to have a long life, and your children have a long life. If you're not careful about mezuzah, so apparently you won't. Nonetheless, although we're supposed to be very careful with mezuzah, but if you have only limited funds, and there's a choice to buy tefillin or mezuzah, so you should purchase tefillin ahead of mezuzah, because mezuzah is an obligation on your home, whereas tefillin is an obligation, again, for men on the body. Now, this is a little bit interesting. When I say that mezuzah is an obligation on the home, there is some sort of discussion here in the Chuvus Rav Akiva Eger and in other Sfarim that does that mean that my house has to have a mezuzah if I'm not in it, or does it mean that my house only has to have a mezuzah if I'm at home? No? You never thought about that one. One could argue, and Reb Kiva Eger entertains this idea in the Tshuva, quotes in the Magen Avraham, Pesukei Tshuva here quotes it, that maybe the only mitzvah mezuzah is when I'm at home. But if I leave home, maybe there's no mitzvah. And therefore, one could argue that if I leave home for an extended period, then I return to my house, maybe I should make a new bracha. It's interesting, it's intriguing, it's worth a shir at a different time. That's like conceptually, but practically speaking, we don't make such a bracha. Now, where do you put the mezuzah? Nisinasa betefach hachitzon. You should put the mezuzah in the external tefach of the door. Now, what we have over here is actually a problem. The mezuzah is supposed to be the external tefach of the door, outside the door, theoretically. No? This door opens outwards, so right, if the door opens inwards, so the mezuzah would be here, and the door would be here, and that would be all grand. No? But now that the door opens outwards, that we have over here in our beautiful TTC, so there is a question as to whether this is kosher as a mezuzah, because the mezuzah is supposed to be in the external tefach of the door. You see, this mezuzah over here also is inside, not outside. Now, you might ask, why is this inside, not outside? Well, the simple reason is the doorpost is inside. Now, sometimes you have doors that open out, and the doorpost is going to be inside. There is a discussion over here that the Shach quotes later on in Simen Reish Pei Tes Se'if Beis. I give you a little bit of Reish Pei Tes Se'if Beis. Here, turn there. It's on the back of the sheet, like the third source down. Reish Pei Tes Se'if Beis says, Ezehu Makom Kviyata B'toch Halal Shel Petach. You have to put it inside the door halal, inside the opening. B'tefach Hasomach L'chutz. If you put it in the wrong place, it is not ma'akev. In other words, we cannot put the mezuzah. Let's take this door, okay? Right? I can't put the mezuzah, right? Could not be outside. Because then it would not be on the doorpost. Then it would be on the wall. The mezuzah has to be on the doorpost. In order to have the mezuzah on the doorpost over here, we put it inside. We follow the opinion that in Shina in Oma'akev, that if you put it in the wrong place, it doesn't matter. That is, now the Shach over here quotes that in his opinion, this is a big machlokas harishonim. The Torah assumes that it doesn't matter. The Rambam assumes it doesn't matter. This is called achorei hakotel. If you achorei hadalet, if you put the mezuzah behind the door instead of in front of the door. Rav Shechter, I have my notes over here from when I learned Hilchos Mezuzah with Rav Shechter. A few. Well, I was actually very lucky that for a couple of years in yeshiva, my chavrusa was Shai Shechter, and Shai is considerably younger than I am. Don't get me wrong. But Shai would arrange, like, as a special perk for learning with him, that like on Thursday nights when his father wasn't busy, which basically ended up being like three times a year, we would learn together in Rav Shechter's house. It was a great experience. I have to admit, we'd sit down and begin learning, let's say at 8 p.m., and around midnight at 12:30, Rav Shechter would say, "Oh my gosh, I didn't daven Ma'ariv. Okay, I guess there's no minyan. Let's learn until Chatzos." That was like, it was like totally, the man who just like would end up in a different place. It was great. We only learned like 3-4 times. Like the whole thing was really a very, no, we learned more than that. We did like Hilchos Refuah on Shabbos. We did mezuzah.
Does a shul need a mezuzah at all?
What? Does a shul need a mezuzah at all? Okay, good question. So, So it goes like this. So this is actually found in Simen Resh Pei Vav Se'if Yud, which I did not photocopy for you, and Resh Pei Vav Se'if Gimel. Resh Pei Vav Se'if Gimel says that a Beis Knesses does not need a mechitza unless someone lives in the shul. Resh Pei Vav Se'if Yud says that a Beis Medrash, there are two opinions, whether it needs a mezuzah or not. Now, what's the difference between a Beis Knesses and a Beis Medrash? So a Beis Knesses is a place that's primarily meant for prayer. Beis Medrash is primarily meant for learning. A room like this, well, when we redid the construction over here, I insisted that this area does not have the Kedusha of a Beis Medrash. Hence, we call it the TTC, no? I tried to give it a new name. I did not want to have Kedusha, because if it has Kedusha, so then we can't rent the room out and have meals in here and stuff like that. I wanted the shul to have additional income. So this is called the TTC, the Torah and Tefillah Center. It is not a Beis Medrash. It's just a room. So if it's just a room, for sure it needs a mezuzah. Now, if it's a Beis Knesses, no mezuzah. Upstairs, no mezuzah into the sanctuary. Down here we have mezuzahs. Why do you have a mezuzah on a Beis Medrash, not a Beis Knesses? So there are two reasons why. One reason why is the Vilna Gaon comments that there's a Yerushalmi that says that a Beis Medrash should have a mezuzah. And in deference to the Yerushalmi, that's what we have. Okay. Another reason is the Maharam of Rutenberg one time took a nap. He fell asleep in Beis Medrash, and as he wakes up, he starts to tremble. Ah! He's trying to figure out how come I'm trembling. So he says, oh, the reason I got scared, is because there is no mezuzah here. So he said they should put a mezuzah up. Now, although ordinarily we do not assume that divrei chalomos, that things that come to me in a dream, have any halachic significance, we say divrei chalomos aman b'lo moridin. Over here, the Gemara of Haram of Rittenberg makes it to Shulchan Aruch. Why that's true is interesting. Rav Schachter felt that over here it's true just because there's a Yerushalmi also. That's what he suggested. But there's a whole literature on this. There's a couple of dreams that some of the Rishonim had that made it to Shulchan Aruch. There's a dream that you're supposed to pay your worker in cash, not in Shavah Kesef, no? So if my babysitter works for me, and I decide at the end of the day, dear babysitter, why don't you take a few nice boxes of Crispix? Shouldn't do that. It's supposed to be cash, ideally. That's also based on the dream. We have a dream that made it to Shulchan Aruch. There's a particular fish called the Barbuta fish that, like some of the Rishonim, had a dream that it was non-kosher, so they stopped eating it. Right? There's a few dreams that kind of made it. Which dreams make it, which dreams don't make it? It's like a whole hot and exciting topic about dreams. But basically, the practice in most communities is like what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that what is a base medrash, you have a mezuzah. Base Knesset, no mezuzah. So far, so good? Yes. Now, why does a base Knesset not get a mezuzah? Because the halacha of mezuzah is it goes on a bias, which is a room that you use. If it's a room that you don't use, or a room that you use for kedusha purposes, no need for mezuzah. Additionally, if it's a room that you use for purposes of less than noble things, if it's a dressing room, and people are undressed in there, or if it's a room where little kids are, and the room is always dirty. One of the questions the guy asked me tonight is he has a junior four apartment in the Heights, and in his junior four, his baby's room has two doors. One door goes from the kitchen into the junior four, the other door goes from the junior one door goes from the kitchen into the bedroom, the other door goes from the bedroom out into the living room. Right, that's just the configuration of it. So he tells me, he just noticed, I never put a mezuzah on that door. Shouldn't he make a bracha? So we had a conversation as we're walking over. So I tell him that, you know what, since that room is your baby's room, and your baby's room contains a changing table, etc., better not to make a bracha, because there is a discussion over here in Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Pei Vav, Sif, hey, I give that to you even. Meish Pei Vav Sif Pei says that if it's a makam sheyesh tinuf, kagon shetinokos mitsuyim sham, so then you should cover the mezuzah. If it's a clean place, the mezuzah should, what's it called? The mezuzah should appear. We assume that rooms that are used for undressing don't have an obligation on mezuzah. Rooms for children, Shulchan Aruch says the mezuzah should be covered. Nonetheless, when we learned with Rav Schachter commented that he didn't really understand why there's a difference between dressing rooms that do not need a mezuzah and a room that kids dirty themselves, soil themselves, where you have a changing table that does need a mezuzah. So therefore, I told this guy, you know what, put the mezuzah up without a bracha. That's what I told him in deference to what I had just reviewed like 10 minutes before he came. Okay. So let's go on in Hilchos Mezuzah. So you're supposed to put the mezuzah, again, where Reish Pei Heis If Beis, this is going to be just an overview. You put the mezuzah betefach hachitzon. Yesh omrim. Some say, when you leave a house, sh'adam yotzei min habayis, yaniach yado al ha-mezuzah, v'yoma Hashem yishmar tzeisi, etc., v'chein, k'shikanis adon habayis, yaniach yado al mezuzah. When you go out of a house, you put your hand on the mezuzah. Go into the house, you put your hand on the mezuzah. You say, Hashem should protect my entrances, my exits. Beautiful. What does it not say here?
What you should say.
Well, it says, you should say, Hashem, v'yomer Hashem, yishmar tzeisi
uvo.
Okay, I mean, so presumably it's the same thing. You go in, you go out. But what does it not say that we do?
Kiss it.
Kiss it. Shtei nishtas megimim de mezuzah akish. Nein? I have to translate into Yiddish for all you Philistines. But it does not say that we give the mezuzah a kiss. Like, what's going on over here? So the practice of kissing the mezuzah, practice of putting your hand on mezuzah has a source in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Aleph. Unklus Hager, they wanted him to the Romans, or like sending people back and forth for Onkelos. They don't want him to convert to Judaism. He wants to convert to Judaism. And every group of Romans who comes to him, Onkelos starts to talk to them, and eventually they convert to Judaism instead. They tried to convince him not to come, and he keeps on converting. And in the middle of that Gemara, they say that as he's about to leave, so Onkelos like puts his hand on the mezuzah. So there's a source in the Gemara that you put a hand in the mezuzah. There's no source in the Gemara that you kiss the mezuzah. The Arizal says you should kiss the mezuzah. Now the Taz jumps up and down and spits wood and nickels. And the Taz says, one second, kiss the mezuzah. You have to be worried that when you kiss the mezuzah, you're going to rub off the name of God on the mezuzah. Cover it. You cover it. It's in the case. You don't rub it off. But the Taz is worried about rubbing it off. Now, there's another concern that, like, touching a mezuzah might be a problem. The Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Yudalit says that if you touch Kisvei HaKodesh with your bare hand, you're going to be buried nikbar arum. You're going to be buried naked. So that's not good, by the way. Usually we cover people before we bury them, worry to the wise, right? If you do a tara, that's the idea, that you cover the people. So the Gemara says, don't touch Kisvei HaKodesh naked. So Rav Shechter, when we were learning together, asked on this Taz, how come the Taz is saying if the mezuzah is not covered, you're just worried that you're going to erase Hashem's name? It's forbidden to touch the mezuzah when it's uncovered. We don't know the answer to that question, but that's what he discussed. Okay.
We don't do any other kissing positions with the mezuzah. No, like full-on kiss or...
Again, it says the idea of kissing a mezuzah comes from the Kabbalah sources of the Ari. Shulchan Aruch says you just touch the mezuzah. Next, Beis HaTeven, Beis HaOtza, Beis HaEitzim, Beis HaBakar, Achayovim. Okay, that means storage areas are obligated in mezuzah, no? Now, if Yaakov Kamenetsky used to comment, and we say a storage area is obligated in mezuzah, that's when the storage area is attached to your home. Let's say, for example, you had there are two different types of garages. There are attached garages and detached garages. No one in the Heights knows anything about a garage, because you think a garage is like this big place on like Broadway where you could leave your car. But if you live in Kansas or somewhere, so you actually saw a garage in your life, right? So a garage comes in two forms. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky felt that Beis HaTeven, Beis HaOtzar, etc., that the storage areas are obligated, and mezuzah is only when you're living in the house. So then, the storage area also takes on the obligation because you live there. This comes up all the time, no? If I move into an apartment in the Heights, let's say my lease is beginning July 1. So what I'm going to do is, like for a couple of weeks before my lease begins, right when my lease begins, before I'm ready to move in, I'll move my stuff into the apartment. Isn't this like standard practice?
Don't you not move in until the lease is...
So let's say the lease begins, and then you move your stuff in, but you're not ready to move in until later. For example, sometimes you take a new apartment because you're getting married. It's like a common thing in the Heights. People are getting married. They take a new apartment. They're going to move their stuff in, and they're not going to then move into them. So, like, I got married June 15th, right? So we got our apartment actually in May, and we started moving stuff in, right? So, at what point do we set the clock for mezuzah? Now, if you ask, what am I talking about, set the clock? So, look at the bottom source on page 1. Hasocher bayis b'chutzol ha'aretz v'hadar b'pundak b'eretz Yisrael patur me'mezuzah shloshim yom. If you rent a home in chutzol ha'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, the obligation for mezuzah is only once you live there for 30 days. But if you rent a home in Eretz Yisrael, you're obligated to mezuzah right away. Right? Anything that you rent in Eretz Yisrael, the assumption is permanent. Right? Renting stuff in Washington Heights, only after you've been there for 30 days does the obligation of mezuzah set in. Now, there are some poskim who say that if you already signed a lease, so they're not going to kick you out, so the obligation begins right away. But if Shechter recommends that what you should do is you should put up the mezuzah without a bracha on day one, when you have your lease, and on day 30, take the mezuzah down, make a bracha, and then re-affix it. Now, other people ask, one second, maybe you should be obligated to mezuzah 30 days from after you moved your stuff in, not 30 days from when you live there, no? So to that, we could say what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is suggesting, that moving your stuff in is only obligated to mezuzah because you're there also. But if you're not there, moving the stuff in doesn't create any sort of obligation. Now, what's interesting to note over here, when it comes to renting homes in Chutzlaris, so the obligation is after 30 days, the Pesachei Tshuva over here entertains an idea which I don't think we follow. Pesachei Tshuva says that maybe if you rent a home in Chutzlaris, that the obligation is after 30 days, maybe the obligation for mezuzah is only when it is an obligation of mezuzah according to all authorities in all cases. For example, let me give you an example. Maimonides writes that you're only obligated on mezuzah and what we would call a super-duper door, which is a door frame, post, lintel. The lintel is not the thing that you eat before Tisha B'Av. The lintel is the thing on top of the doorposts. And you have to have a door. According to Maimonides, if you don't have a door, there is no obligation in mezuzah. Generally, that position Maimonides makes, it's a Shulchan Aruch, as two different opinions. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger suggests that maybe when you rent a house, your obligation in mezuzah is only when it is an unequivocal mezuzah obligation. You also have a door, no? Look in the Pesachei Tshuva over here. Top of page 2. Tshuva Rabbi Akiva Eiger, Soif Simin Samach Vav, Kosav, Hu Hadin Asochev Beis Tevin Ve'etzim Chai B'mezuzah. If you rent a garage, you're obligated mezuzah. E after from riyat or yenira the pater, kiven the socher pater min haTorah. Have a suffix rabbanon. Maybe we pass like the Rambam based seven, but eight sem is pater. Still, since Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote that Rambam, not to make a bracha, so obviously that Rambam is rejected. In other words, what Rabbi Akiva Eiger is suggesting is that, you know what, when we talk about a base tevin, a base eitzim, a home that you use for storage, there's an opinion of the Rambam that it's exempt from mezuzah. That opinion of the Rambam, however, does not make it to Shulchan Aruch at all. Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, because it does not make it to Shulchan Aruch, he's assuming that Shulchan Aruch is the binding work of halacha, which itself is an assumption, but that's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger is assuming. And therefore, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, a home, a Beis HaTeven in Chutz Laaretz is still obligated in mezuzah because the Rambam doesn't make it. Ulefi zeh, two lines from the bottom. Nirek tzas, tahanuch d'nizkor shulchanuch, das hameko. Like place where women are lying undressed. That's like what we call a dressing room. A Beis Sha'ar. A Beis Sha'ar is a room that leads into another room if no door opens up to it. And a Beis Megdrash. And a door that does, and Umbayish Englund's Lossos, and a home that does not have doors, it could be that you are putter by Socher. In other words, Rabbi Akiva Eiger is entertaining this idea, and this is amazing, which is as follows. That one could suggest, since we are renting our apartments, right? Most of us in the Heights are renting, right? So since we're renting our apartments, so the obligation is only a rabbinic obligation, so then perhaps we should not put up a mezuzah, or perhaps we could defend only putting up a mezuzah in a place where it's an unequivocal obligation, in a place where there is a door. Therefore, let's say someone's jacked for cash, I would say, you know what, and we tell this to people sometimes, the only rooms in my apartment that are really obligated in mezuzah are my bedrooms. Because all the other rooms in my apartment don't have doors. I have a front door. So my front door is not really obligated mezuzah because my front door opens up to a room that is not 4 amos by 4 amos, right? My front door opens up to a small hallway. I think most front doors open to a small hallway. So it does not open to something that's definitely obligated a mezuzah. So it's a little bit weird. If you want to save money, you would have a mezuzah only on your bedroom, not on your front door, right? And not on any of the other rooms. And according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, right, you could be a lamdan and say, now again, generally speaking, mezuzah is not that expensive. You can get mezuzahs for around $30. So there are different types of mezuzahs on the Eichler's website. 30, 45, and 60, as far as I know. And if you want to move up, you can get the $80 mezuzahs. It's a question as to what you should do or not, but honestly, most people can't afford an additional $30. You're supposed to put up a mezuzah. It can't hurt. But in terms of a bracha, you only make the bracha on the bedroom. And what you should do when you move into an apartment, you should make one bracha on the bedroom where it's a definite obligation because you have a door and everything. And have in mind all the other doors in the apartment. Okay, let's go. Se'if Yud Gimel. Right, on page 1. Bayish she'im ba'dalad amos ha'dalad amos pater. Even though it's longer than it's wide, or it's square, it has five corners, it's obligated. Okay, it goes like this. In order to be obligated, the mezuzah has to be a house. A house, the Gemara teaches us at the beginning of Sukkah, is that has 4 amos by 4 amos, which is 7 3/4 feet by 7 3/4 feet. Do we have rooms in our apartments that are not 7 3/4 feet by 7 3/4 feet? You bet your bottom dollar. We mentioned the hallways, no? Now, hallways might be, because, you see, when I talk about 7 3/4 by 7 3/4, am I talking about a square, or am I talking about the area of 7 3/4 by 7 3/4? Now, you could have something, right? By the way, I hated geometry in high school, so you'll forgive me. I totally hated this. But let's say I have something that's like really thin and very long, right? 8 by 2 is the same as 4 by 4, right? Correct? Advanced mathematics, 16 by 1 is also the same, right? So hallways maybe do have an obligation of mezuzah, because the Shulchan Aruch follows the opinion of the Rambam that when we speak about 4 amos by 4 amos, it does not have to be 4 by 4, but 8 by 2 would also count as 4 by 4. The Rush assumes that it has to be 4 by 4 in two dimensions. But some of our rooms might not be 4 by 4. Let me give you an example. My kitchen. Heights kitchens. We love them, no? So Heights kitchens are often very narrow, right? Heights kitchens also might not have 4 by 4 of halachic space, even if you use the Rambam of 8 by 2 being the same as 4 by 4, because I have these things called counters and the refrigerator that take away space, take away floor space.
Well, they're on the floor space.
They're on the floor space, but it means that the room doesn't have that 8 by 2 floor space. Many poskim feel that if it is immovable or unmovable or however you pronounce it, so it takes away the space. But my refrigerator, which in theory I can move, right? So what I would do is I'd assume that my counters I can't move. So that is mema'it, that takes away some of the floor space. It's entirely possible that the room that your kitchen is not going to be 16 square amos. My kitchen is not 16 square amos. Now, if it's not 16 square amos, like closets, for example, right? Even a walk-in closet, is it 16 square amos? Halavai, right? Maybe if like you live in like the Hechera places over there, right? I don't know. It could be that it's not 16 square amos. Some poskim feel that may Iker Hadin, you're exempt if it does not have 4 by 4. Others feel, and there's a Reb Kiva Eger to this extent, that an area that is not 4 by 4 is halachically the equivalent of the outside of the house. And therefore you put the mezuzah not going into that area, but going out of that area. You see, the mezuzah over here, in this room, right, is right side from the outside going in. Why? Because that is a door to the outside. Now, this is a little complicated because this door is only an exit, in theory, although I felt this door counts as an entrance and an exit, and my proof is that there's a handle on the outside. Even though I have, like, one of these, what are these called?
Panic bars
on the door. But nonetheless, this door, in theory, I think there is a key that you could use to get in from the outside, and you have that whole thing on the outside. So I assume that's a door that's meant for both entrance and exit. If the door is only an emergency exit, that's a very complicated question halachically. An emergency exit. But this mezuzah is right side going in because it's coming from the outside in. No? You don't go from here out because there's no room out. Right? So Reb Kiva Eger suggests, in the conventional way of understanding Reb Kiva Eger, that if I have a closet, I have a walk-in closet, so the walk-in closet becomes like the outside of the house. So I put the mezuzah on my walk-in closet going into my apartment. On the right side going in. That's what I have in my apartment. Again, one could argue that there's no obligation because we're only renting and it's a drabon on the chutzaretz after 30 days, etc., etc., etc. Like we pointed out, but if you want to spend an extra $30, it should go, we have Shechter Paskins going in. Fine.
Going into which room?
Going into, so it goes from my walk-in closet, I have a walk-in closet into my hallway, right? And I have another walk-in closet in, I have like, basically like a living room, family room. I have a walk-in closet off of that room. Also, so that goes into the room, right? The mezuzah goes into the room.
So facing into the room is on the right side?
On the right side going in. Like what we have over here, right side going into the room.
Into the closet?
Into, no, not into the closet. Into the, from the, assume the closet's like the outside of the house. It's the right side going in. Fine. Next. Let's turn to the second side. Again, we're just giving a brief overview of some of the mezuzah issues. That's why, for example, in my apartment in the Heights, I have the mezuzah on my kitchen going on the right side from the kitchen going into my eating area, which used to be a dining room, but then we made it into like the kitchen eating area. Why is it over there? Because my kitchen does not have 4x4 of floor space. Now, the weird thing about my Heights kitchen is I have like a little shorty. You know what I'm talking about? Some of the Heights kitchens have, instead of like a full doorpost that goes up to the ceiling, like a normal doorpost, they have like a little short thing. It looks like this. It's a little short doorpost. I have two of them like this. No? There is a lintel on top. Like, it protrudes down, and it's not a full doorway. It's like a little guy.
What do you mean?
It's this type of thing. So the doorway going into the inside of the kitchen is basically a short little guy like that on two sides.
Huh? What are you talking about? You're just going to rush over.
I walk through like this. Right, assuming that there's a short little guy on this side, a short little guy on this side, I walk right through into the kitchen. Right, you have it.
Two small little pedestals.
Right.
What?
It's a Heights thing. I don't know.
Oh, I think you know, like in the dining rooms.
Oh, yeah, like in some of the Heights dining rooms, you have like a banister.
Yeah.
Right? Now, like many of the Heights apartments have like a sunken dining room. Like when my grandmother, Allah Shalom, saw it, she's like, oh my gosh, a sunken dining room. Apparently this is like a thing. Right? A sunken living room, right, that's what it is, a sunken living room.
Yeah.
It's
a thing that's for all people.
I don't get the whole thing, yeah. But this little guy is really the doorway. Because I don't walk through over here, because if I try to walk through over here, I would hurt myself, no? I walk through the middle. Because I walk through the middle, so therefore this is a doorway. If that's the case, that this is a doorway, so you end up with a mezuzah, something like this. Going out of the kitchen on the right side, and it looks really short. Now, that's a great mezuzah. If you want to teach a little kid to kiss a mezuzah, wonderful. However, in a normal place, the halacha of a mezuzah should be, look in Reish Pei Tessa, if Beis, the a mezuzah should be b'tefach ha-samach l'chutz, etc., and should be b'tchilas shlish ha-oyon gova ha-shar. It should be at the beginning of the lower third of the doorpost. Right, so what you do is, you take a tape measure, and you measure how tall this is. This is, let's say, 58 inches. Who knows me? What's 58 divided by 3? So 65 inches is 20, right? So it's a little more than 20, right?
A little less than 20.
So what you should do is measure a little bit, right? Like, whatever it is, like 19, and put it at the beginning of the lower part of the top third of the door. Oftentimes, people put the mezuzah too high up. The mezuzah is supposed to be the lower part of the top third of the door. Now, if you put the mezuzah within one tefach of the ceiling, not yotze. You have to put the mezuzah, right, ideally the top third of the doorpost, but not so close to the ceiling. Has to be at least 3.5 inches from the ceiling. Right? It should be the lower part of the top third of the doorpost. Okay, now, there is a discussion about which way the mezuzah should go. There's a machlokas Rashi in the Rabbeinu Tam. Is it considered more respectful to keep your Sifrei Torah horizontal or vertical? So, there's a machlokas. So the Rabbeinu Tam assumes that's more respectful if it is vertical. And we keep our Sifrei Torah in the Aron Kodesh vertical. Right? Rashi feels it's more respectful if it is horizontal. We are not sure who's right, Rashi or the Rabbeinu Tam. So by mezuzah, we put our mezuzahs diagonal to fulfill both Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. Now, it's a little interesting because I have Sifrei Torah in here. Right? Oh, you see they didn't do a lot of Aron Kodesh. But my Sifrei Torah, not diagonal. You don't have to stand up when the Aron is open. It's in different shows. Right? It's not diagonal. How come my mezuzahs are diagonal, but my Sifrei Torah aren't? My Sifrei Torah are straight up. So this is the Vilna Gaon's question. Do you know what the Vilna Gaon answers? Put your mezuzahs straight up. Right? When I was at the Laz Dun house, now during Shiva for the Sofer, Rabbi Laz Dun, I noticed all of his mezuzahs were straight up, like the Vilna Gaon. Like our Sifrei Torah are. Like my tefillin, the parshas of my tefillin are straight up. I don't have a parshas of my tefillin diagonal, no? Straight up. That's what the Vilna Gaon assumes. Okay, somehow the practice is that by mezuzah, we keep our mezuzahs diagonal. I felt it was interesting that Rabbi Laz Dun had his mezuzahs all straight up.
I think it was a question whether you're in Christian lands or Islamic lands, because in Christian lands they used to make a cross.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I took a tour once to the old city and the guy said that.
What is straight up?
I'm not sure. No,
and then the cross, you put a crossbar.
Well, who
if someone would make another crossbar, would have been interesting. I don't know. I've never heard that, but
you can't have stuff like that if you're going to get that.
Now, okay, let's just talk very briefly. We're almost done. A doorway is Simon Reish Pei Zayin Sif Alpha. A doorway is only obligated mezuzah if there are two mezuzahs and a mashkof. That means two posts and a lintel. Two posts and a lintel. I have one room in my apartment that leads into what we now have as our Pesach kitchen, but it used to be the second kitchen in the apartment. We broke through, so we had two kitchens. And according to New York State law, you're not allowed to have two. New York State law, you can't have two kitchens in an apartment. So, I don't know. That's the halacha, they told us. So we call it our Pesach kitchen. It's not really a Pesach kitchen. It's really a laundry room with a stove and a Pesach refrigerator. It's like my cousins in Lakewood don't watch television. They watch their air conditioner, right? Because whatever.
Could somebody come and inspect you and nail you for having?
I don't think so. I mean, the building manager felt it's okay, and he had some shtickle terror, which I don't understand why. I don't know. But basically, you need two doorposts and a lintel on top. If you have one doorpost and a lintel, there is no obligation of mezuzah, min ha-tayra, certainly. But if you have one doorpost and a lintel, and the doorpost is on the right side going in, so then we put up a mezuzah midrabanan. But if you have one doorpost and a lintel, and it's on, and the doorpost is on the left side, then there is no obligation. Okay, so that is already complicated. There's a little complication in how you deal with an archway in halacha. Whether an archway, at what point does the doorpost stop and the lintel begin? Okay, so that's a sugyan erevin daf yud aleph. Not for now. The last halacha that I want to talk about is the last shaila I get from people, and they live in the Heights, which is when I'm moving out, am I allowed to take my mezuzahs? Now the Gemara in Bava Metzia, actually, like on Kuf Dalet or something, the Gemara Bava Metzia says, and you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs, because if you take the mezuzah, you're opening the apartment up to be destroyed by Shadim, by demons. Again, mezuzahs are protection. It's an Uncle Maishi song, so it has to be true. Like, so therefore, you should not take the mezuzahs down. However, if the apartment will be taken over by non-Jews, then you can take the mezuzahs down. When the apartment is taken over by Jews, I'm not allowed to take the mezuzah down, but I'm allowed to charge the next Jewish tenants for my mezuzahs. Oh, yeah. I could say, oh, you want? What?
Supposing they want to bring their own.
If they want to bring their own, so that's their business, I can charge them for this one. I'm not allowed to take it down, and I'm going to sell it to them. If they want to remove it and put up their own, that's their business. Right? But that's the basic halacha. Now, as a general rule, in most cases in the height, I tell people that they can take the mezuzah down, they should take the mezuzah down, because usually when you move out of your apartment, the landlord paints. When the landlord paints, they increase your rent. And when the landlord paints, what they also do is they have goyim who have access. I have seen lots of mezuzahs that were painted over, and they were not treated respectfully. So therefore, you should take the mezuzah down if they will be painting afterwards. This fellow, a friend of mine, Menachem Butler, told me he was in Boston last week or a couple weeks ago, and he went to the homes where Rav Soloveitchik lived just to visit. Now there are non-Jews in Roxbury or something who live in Rav Soloveitchik's old home, and he could see that the mezuzahs were still up, and they were straight up. So Menachem Butler went to ask Rabbi Twersky, who's Rav Soloveitchik's grandson, like, what's going on? So I said, I don't know. That's the whole story. I don't know. But
how often should mezuzahs be checked?
So mezuzahs should be checked, technically speaking, twice every 7 years. However, that is only true, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, if a mezuzah is outside and it's exposed to the elements. If a mezuzah is inside and it's not exposed to the elements, technically speaking, there's no need to check a mezuzah. Now, the sofer will hate me for saying this, but checking a mezuzah does not mean that you need a sofer. Checking a mezuzah means you take the mezuzah off the door and you read it. And if you don't notice anything strange, you should all know the first two chapters of Shema, right? And if it looks like the first two chapters, you assume it was written properly. What you're looking for is the letters crack or stuff like that, that you would notice on your own. So you do not need a sofer to check. Certainly, the Kabbalistic mezuzah checkers are people to stay away from. And these people are a total farce. Okay, but these are some of my comments on mezuzah. Now, I think officially we have covered all of the topics that I planned on covering in the Life of the Heights series. Are there any topics that people want me to cover that I have not covered?
You discuss incinerator shoots.
A what?
Incinerator shoots.
Incinerator.
Compactors.
We could talk about those. Okay.
Is there interest? I don't know.
Fine. We could talk about incinerator shoots, compactors. What else have we not discussed? What? Hot water on Shabbos. Okay.
And then we also talked about the things like filters.
The what?
Filters.
Filters on water?
For some people, like my roommate, I almost went.
Okay, what else? Anything else? Now, I could do like another share on this. Then I was thinking of moving on to one of two things. Either to use the rest of this summer to talk about, I was thinking about doing this, a topic called the Chief Rabbis, which is to kind of discuss, probably not all the Chief Rabbis, some Chief Rabbis are much cooler than others, the ones I consider cool, to give a little bit of their biography, to talk about how they learned halacha and what else made them unique.
Israeli chief rabbis,
right? So not British chief rabbis. I was thinking of doing that. Alternatively, I was thinking of maybe learning Treyasar. Any votes? I mean, next week we'll talk about, I guess, incinerator shoots and hot water and various and sundry other things. But if people have ideas, either email me or tell me or send me a carrier pigeon. Thank you for listening and have a good night.